My name is Alani Apio.
Alani, what have you been doing in this park for the last... How long, you tell me?
Okay, just to take a step back, are we talking about the play, or are we talking about the work that I've been doing, or are we talking about both?
I want to find out how the work you've been doing has affected your writing.
Okay. I've been working in this park maybe about, this park in particular, it's hard to say because I started, I met some of my friends down here that have become the leaders of Kapo'io Kaka'ako almost 2 years ago before they swept the Makai Park with a big encampment. So it's not a simple question to say how long have I been here and working here. So over this time period, a couple of years ago, some friends and I got together because we realized we were losing our sense of aloha for each other in these islands. So we formed a group called Hui Aloha, and our initial work was not aimed at houselessness and the challenge that presents, but in general, looking at our society across the islands and figuring out, okay, how come we're losing our aloha for each other? And then from there, one of the things that we realized was that how we're treating societally, how we're treating those, for whatever reasons, who don't have homes now, is very much, especially from a governmental standpoint, the antithesis of aloha. We have gone down a track of criminalizing behaviors, human behaviors, of homelessness. You know, sleeping in a park, staying in public spaces after hours, putting up tents. We've criminalized those behaviors, and to us, that's the very antithesis of aloha, because we have a housing crisis. So criminalizing people who are challenged with that situation is the absolute wrong way to go. And then from there, we started working with different communities and kind of figuring it out as we went along, because my degree is in drama and theater, and my work for the past 18 years has been with Native Hawaiian burial issues, among other things. But I've not worked directly with houselessness and those who are experiencing homelessness pretty much ever. Although a number of years ago, as an experiment in compassion, I went homeless for as long as I could, and incognito, to see what it was like. And it was the most terrifying, humiliating, degrading, humbling, and enlightening experience that I've ever had. And it gave me a small window into what those who experience homelessness feel and experience. And so when we were looking at homelessness as an issue, I could relate to a certain extent more, I think, than other people. And so I've been working along with our group, like I said, called Hui Aloha, for coming on now 2 years, to see if we can... what I try to do, the way that I work, is my goal is to try to lessen suffering and reduce suffering in these islands. And so if I can do that, then to me, I'm being helpful. So I've been working with different communities across the islands and using the model that we learned and watched and have been part of with Twinkle Them out at Twinkle Borj, out at Pu'u Honua o Waianae, and learning from them how to recreate and regrow true human communities that we as humans have lived in for millennia, for tens of thousands of years, but that our modern world has pretty much destroyed and devalued. And what we're finding is that, you know, to me at least, a lot of the ills and challenges that we face humanity-wide like the globe wide, is that we've lost connection with ourselves and the natural world. And because we evolved to be in those systems and an integral part of it, there's a lot of suffering that comes from that disconnection from ourselves, from each other, and from the natural world. So that's a long way of saying, what have I been doing on Earth for the last couple of years? So one of the things that I've found by doing what I would call street outreach is that everybody's got a story. And one of the first things that you have to do is decide, you know, whether you want to engage. And, well, the first thing is to build trust in relationships. And what I found is that coming in with no particular agenda, trust and relationships come easier, because I'm not trying to sell anybody on anything. I'm not trying to heal them. I'm not trying to do anything for them except acknowledge them as human beings, acknowledge others who are experiencing homelessness as human beings, as they are. And then from there, see what happens. And sometimes friendships and relationships build. And that's a wonderful thing. And sometimes people will open up and tell me their stories. And what I've found is everybody's got one, right? And I thought, I've known that I've lived through some pretty challenging things as far as, the rest of my peers over my lifetime, and starting very early. But when I listen to some of the life stories of some of my friends and the people that I meet out on the streets, it's humbling in that it's like, whoa, I don't think I would have actually survived that. I'm pretty sure if I had to experience that, I probably would have killed myself a long time ago, because I don't think I could live with that kind of pain, that level of pain. And so, in one way, it's definitely deepened my understanding of the human spirit and what people are capable of, I wouldn't say overcoming, but surviving. And I think one of the challenges is that, like myself, we're surviving through trauma and pain, but that doesn't mean we're thriving. And so I think with respect to my writing, there's a level of truth about living that happens on the streets that we don't come across often in our day-to-day lives, in our housed lives. In other words, I've been in situations where it's like, shit could go down and sideways and somebody could get hurt or killed, and I'm in the middle of this right now. It's life unobscured. Like, there's no veil. There's no courteous curtain. It's just in your face life. And that helps to be honest in my own writing. And I always strive to do that, is to strip away all of the artifices that we put on to hide and to protect ourselves and expose the truth. Whatever that is. That being the truth about the human condition. Because I think that helps. I think it helps us as humans understand ourselves and each other. And in that way, I think it helps to lessen the suffering.
Where do people draw strength from?
What, out here?
The people can get it from their jobs, their position, their bank account.
I think more than us in housed communities understand, because we live more comfortable lives, more creature comfort lives, is that people, out on the streets draw strength from each other, because that's all they have. They draw strength from their animal companions. They're their own safety nets. And I think there's a big part, that right there is a big part of the complete misunderstanding of what it's like to live on the streets. There are plenty of isolated people out here, but there are also, I think, the vast majority who are connected to each other in ways that mirror or are equitable to those who live in and through trauma. And I'm thinking about, you know, those who go to war together, those who live through natural disasters together. When you go through deeply challenging situations as humans, you bond with each other. And what we don't realize is that those who live on the streets, especially for extended periods of time, develop deep, deep relationships and connections to others. We can choose to think about those relationships however we want, and I'm not saying that they're always helpful or healthy, but they are powerful. And we don't recognize that because we can't see it. We're not privy to it. And in not understanding how much people on the streets can be connected to each other, we fail to recognize that that has to be acknowledged when we, quote unquote, offer solutions and want to help. Did that answer your question? I also think that there's a certain amount of Darwinism that happens, and that is the strong survive and the weak do not. So think what you might, but I found that the people that I've met and the longer that they've been out on the street, they're survivors. They are, whatever their makeup and however they got made, they are tough human beings in some senses. I also think, I've met a lot of people that I would say, like me, are emotionally and spiritually shattered, but have chosen to stay in the game for whatever reason.
Where do you draw strength from?
I think a similar place. I think I've finally realized that people love me. So I try to reach out to my friends and loved ones, and I've learned more and more to do that so that I don't harm myself in short and long term.
What does it mean to you now that the trilogy's finished?
In one sense, it's been a monkey on my back for the last 20 years. So, I haven't fully, comprehended as well. I haven't fully accepted that it's over and I've completed it. But it's nice to, literally, I finished the final rewrite this past Saturday evening at 6 o'clock.
At least 5 days they have rehearsed, right?
Yeah, exactly. So each of these stories, the first story you know, the main character is Alika Ke Aloha, and, you know, I identify, I think, most closely with Alika, although he's not me. And then when I wrote Kamawa'e, Harry reminded me that my first draft, Alika was the main character again, yet we had intended that it would be Michael. And so he said, you know, after we talked about it, you went back, and in 3 months you gave me a rewritten script that put Michael as the main character. Well, logically, in the context of the trilogy, the final show, or the final piece, logically should be Stevie's story. Stevie Calais, the young niece, slash daughter. Of everybody in my plays, I know the mind of a Hapa millennial local girl the least. And so that's part of the reason. And the first draft that I gave Harry, she was the instigator of the action, but she wasn't the main character. And I knew that, and I accepted it. I was like, look, this is the best that I got. And Harry, in his inimitable, is that the right word? Is in his inimitable way, in his inimitable Harriness, encouraged me to make Stevie the main character. And when I struggled with it, like what he did was, he literally took the play and scrambled it. He took all the scenes and scrambled them up so that she could be more and more the main character. And at some point, it was like, ah, all right, I'll try. And I think at that point, we had already begun rehearsals. So I was just like going home. Not even going home. I just stayed home and just tried and tried and tried to wrap my head around what it would mean to make her the main character. And I literally finished the rewrites this Saturday night. And they're going to open next week, Thursday, a week from today. And God bless them. They are an extraordinary cast. And I've apologized profusely for putting them to it. And they haven't quit. So, yeah, I'm hoping it turns out okay.
They're showing some of the qualities of your friends on the street.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, I haven't... I think it'll be a nice relief when I finally can watch it on stage and put those stories and these characters to rest. It's, you know, it's... If you've watched it or read it, they're not easy stories. And I'm tired of carrying that load and those feelings, and it'll be nice to let them go.
Hope you can. Thank you.
Thank you.